Social license to operate. What is it? How do you obtain it? How does it affect the approval and regulatory processes? What is social license's place in the legal process? We address these questions with our guest Radha Kirpan, the Vancouver managing partner of Bennett Jones. Ms. Kirpan is the co-head of Aboriginal Law with the firm. As well, she is an adjunct professor at the University of Toronto's Faculty of Law, and she was a sessional lecturer at Robson Hall Faculty of Law for Sustainability and Corporate Social Responsibility. Conversations That Matter is a partner program of the Center for Dialogue at Simon Fraser University. The production of this program is made possible thanks to the support of the following and viewers like you. Radha Kirpan, welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining me on Conversations That Matter. Today we're talking about what is social license or social license to operate. So I think that there's a tremendous amount of confusion around, is this something that's just an idea and it's kind of an intangible, or is it something that is concrete and needs to be adhered to and obtained if you're going to develop some kind of resource or major project in Canada these days?
So social license is not like your legal license. So of course you go through all the regulatory process to obtain your legal license, etc. There's that, and then there is expectations by society, other different segments of society and society as a whole, about what the business or the project or the proponent need to do in order to get the acceptance of society, if I want to call it that way. And the gap between the legal license that proponent does go and get and society's expectations is where the social license resides.
So social license, though, is something that's outside of that regulatory or administrative process that has been developed fairly rigorously over a long period of time, and yet it still has impact.
Yes, absolutely. It's because the people, so social license, if you want to call it acceptance by society, increasingly you have expectations, rising expectations by society, whether it's on regulatory process and trust in business and all kinds of issues. You've got the economic financial crisis. You've got all kinds of issues that has sort of tainted the way society look at business. There's technology. There's a number of drivers that have drive the issue of social license and the issue of why are people talking about social license. So there is a distrust of the regulatory process.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, people are talking about social license as something else in addition to the regulatory process of getting a license.
So when we look at the regulatory process, though, as I mentioned, it's been thought out for a long period of time.
Yes.
I mean, social license, we don't have that same kind of structure. And
yes.
Yet it clearly is a powerful voice. Are we now in a position where we need to bring some kind of structure that says, you want social license, this is how it has to be obtained? Because at the moment, it looks like it's an ad hoc process.
It is very difficult, because what is social license? It's how do you get society to accept one? What is the society we're talking about? What is the public? What is the community? There's diverse views. There will be a local community. There will be indigenous communities. There will be other stakeholders. So I would put indigenous communities as right holders. Then you have other holders, stakeholders. There are investors. There are customers. There's public. There's government. There's all kinds of things. So how do you achieve that? I don't think it's about proponent or business trying to achieve it. I think it's more about a lot to do with government and the fact that there has to be a process that people trust. And so as a result, I don't view it, and I'm I'll be clear, I do act for industry, but an industry, politicians, indigenous communities, all kinds of, and the public in general talk about social license in different contexts.
It's different. You're absolutely right. Virtually everybody that you talk to about, well, what is social license to operate or social license, has a different definition of it.
Yes.
And it depends on whether or not it's a local issue. Is it something that has a broader impact, let's say, in the province or across the country? Then who are the partners or players that come into this? In doing this kind of ad hoc examination of different projects, David Bursey, who works for you, I noted that he said, so are we creating some sort of instability in the overall regulatory process if we're calling it into question because we have a different set of principles or rules for all of these different kinds of projects in different jurisdictions?
So,
and does that cause us some issues about becoming less regulated?
So, by the way, I want to clarify, David Bursey doesn't work for me. He's one of my partners.
Yeah, I meant that he works with you.
Yeah, yes, that's right. Yeah. So I want to make, but what I want to say is that there's no question that when you keep on talking about social license, it does put into question, do we have a regulatory process that is rigorous? Or in doing so, I think some people would say that in talking about social license and putting so much emphasis on this, we are actually undermining our regulatory process.
Mm-hmm.
So, and if we are free in a democracy, so where we have laws, and the laws define how we act,
mm-hmm.
and the laws explain that when you go you are going to do a project, you're going to go seek a particular license, you're going to seek a particular approval, and the laws have defined an environmental assessment process that's supposed to assess the impacts of a project, and the law also allows for public participation, and in the case of indigenous communities, there's also the right to be consulted and to accommodate.
Mm-hmm.
So there's all these things, and people say, okay, if we are doing all these things, that should give us our social license.
Right, so it's interesting that you bring up indigenous communities, because post-Silcoteen, we now know from Justice McLaughlin's decision that it's not just we're going to consult, but there has to be consent and cooperation from First Nations. And so we understand what the guidelines are there. And if we take a look at the wood fiber project up in Howe Sound, and you look at the way that they worked with the Squamish First Nation to obtain their consent and cooperation and participation, we would say, well, that becomes the model. And we can repeat that time after time after time. We don't have those same kinds of guidelines around social license. And so my feeling is that this concept of social license makes us a little bit more vulnerable to the whims or the wishes of the loudest protester.
It does do that. It absolutely does that. But it also, I think, the reason we have this social license discussion or conversation happening is the result, is the outcome of people not being satisfied, of people's expectations being higher, or of having to voice certain issues and having no way of voicing them except through maybe the regulatory process that is not for that.
Mm-hmm.
So you just mentioned a particular project, and I would say that the timing of consultation, whether it's with indigenous communities or a broader set of communities, whether it's that or other stakeholders, the timing is important, the level of participation is important, and the level of people feeling that they are collaborating,
mm-hmm.
or feeling empowered by some of the decisions or some of the knowledge that is imparted is going to be important. And I think that's where, if you can accomplish that, and that's why I say government has a big role to play,
mm-hmm.
if government can give stakeholders and right holders the comfort they need with respect to that regulatory process, it would go a long way towards achieving social license rather than putting it on the back of industry.
So that's interesting. How then do we establish that public confidence within this process so that everybody can say, yes, I have confidence that this decision was made with the interests of all parties, the economy, the environment, neighbors, and so on, and do it in a way that, because we know that there are groups that know the way that we attack a particular project because we don't like it is to undermine confidence in that process.
Yes.
So how do we build that confidence in so that there is public confidence that this was the right decision?
I think it's a very good question. Let me say one is that there will always be people who protest, and there will be always people who are going to be very vocal about it, and they're loud about it.
Yes.
So there are people who are for a project, but you do not hear their voice. So there's always going to be that.
Mm-hmm.
So let's make that clear. But in terms of building confidence, I think it's really about saying and accepting the fact we do have a regulatory process, we do have laws, and we are a law-abiding society,
mm-hmm.
and but we can always improve, all right? So by improvement, I mean rely on those, make sure that you have a proper regulator, one, that has all the ability and the tools
mm-hmm.
to do the job that they have to do. Make sure they appear, not just they are and appear to be impartial and
mm-hmm.
objective, that they are not swayed by politics and politicians. And make sure that you have, at the end of the day, you have good participation and you have by the public. And at the end of the day, a decision that is based on the evidence that's been put forward and that has taken into account concerns raised by various communities and see how they are addressed or how there's a condition or a term of condition that is attached to a project that says, okay, this has been addressed. So it has to be a lot more. So what I'm saying is that we have a regulatory process. We should not undermine it. Is there ways we can improve it? Yes, there's always ways to improve
mm-hmm.
and continue to improve and have a discussion about how to improve that process. All the people who are talking about social license, talk to them and bring them to the table and say, okay, well, how do we have a process that would be satisfied, that would satisfy your big concerns? And keeping in mind, there's always going to be people who are going to be objecting because they are going to object whether or not, because they do not want the process, they do not want the particular project. So it doesn't
mm-hmm.
matter what you do, there will always be some of that.
Now, if we take a look back over the history of sort of the social license rising up as a component of getting approval for resource projects or large urban projects and so on, we see that rising over the last 25 years or so. But at the same time, we've seen a rise in this concept of corporate social responsibility. Are the two connected? Should they be connected? And if they're not, should we make them connected?
Yes. So the whole idea of corporate social responsibility is it's more like, I view it anyway, as a tool for businesses, if I'm looking at businesses, because this is who
mm-hmm.
I advise, to identify the risk associated with their operations, right? And one of the risks are, one is environmental impacts, another is social impacts,
mm-hmm.
in the sense that they're operating wherever it is, whether it's a mine in a developing country or something else, or energy infrastructure, they're operating something where there could be impacts on the local community or larger community.
Mm-hmm.
And they identify this as a risk, and they take steps to manage that risk, whether it is by engaging with those stakeholders, identifying the stakeholders first, engaging with them early, and in order to obtain approval, and collaborating or getting their input into what is being done, and continuing to do so afterwards, after your approval is obtained, continuing to do so during the life of the project. That's what I call corporate social responsibility. The outcome of that, of this tool that you use, can be obtaining what we call the social license to operate, because you have acceptance by the community as a result of you having done your work ahead of time and identifying areas of potential risk, because that's what they are, and managing those.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, protesting against a project is a potential risk.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
So when we take a look at the process that we have in place in British Columbia and by extension Canada, how are we doing? Are we doing a very good job of it?
Well, I think, again, people who hear this may say that I'm biased because I act for industry. I actually think that industry in whatever the areas is, whether it's mining, energy infrastructure, whatever it is, it is forestry. It's all companies who are sophisticated. They are sophisticated. They know that it is actually good business to engage with your stakeholders, and the business of business is business. So so, irrespective of their other altruistic motives, they, for business reason, it is good to do that. Mm-hmm. So they do that. And they try to do it as early as possible. I know a lot of people do. And they engage, they consult, they accommodate, and they're still at risk.
Mm-hmm.
And they are at risk because I find that, and I'm not talking about a particular government, I'm talking about government in general, not a particular province, or this, that government is the weak link, is what I would say.
Because they're swayed by public opinion and those loud voices.
They are, one. Two, they sometimes, when they are, when you talk about, for example, the duty to consult for indigenous communities, the duty to consult is triggered when government is going to take action that could impact, that has the potential to original rights, indigenous rights. And the duty is on government to do certain things. They delegate the procedure to proponents. That's fine, because proponents is the one who have the most knowledge about the project. But they can't just do that. They have to actually make sure that things are done properly, and two, but what we end up doing is that it's the proponent, the advisors to the proponent, who makes who exercise a degree of oversight on government to make sure that government is doing its job.
Mm-hmm.
And so, because if government doesn't do what it's supposed to do, that's what put the project at risk. So ultimately, that has been a lot of what we have seen across Canada. We have the rising expectations of society.
Mm-hmm.
So you have that going on. You have two things going on.
Which I know Abraham Lincoln said, whether it's well-informed or ill-informed, it's still not to be taken lightly.
That's right.
We have to listen to that.
Yes.
And it affects the way that processes play themselves out.
Exactly. Perceptions are extremely important.
Mm-hmm.
Expectations are extremely important. Those are the drivers of social license. Those are the drivers behind social license. So when government is not doing what it's supposed to do, it's causing mistrust.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and that distrust is continue to make the people who call for social license to operate, we hear them loud and clear.
So is that putting investment in projects at risk in Canada? Are there organizations, especially international organizations, that look at Canada and say, I don't know, the process is so difficult, I think I'll look somewhere else. And this is something that we have to keep in mind.
There are. There are situations like that. In fact, We do give advice to foreign companies, foreign organizations who are looking at making investments in Canada, all across Canada, and that is the regulatory process, the fact that there is no certainty right now, and that you go through a regulatory process with the rigor that you would put in, that in the end you would get a license that you can count on mm-hmm. and depend on. It is a problem.
The application process is long and it's expensive.
Exactly.
With uncertain outcomes. So
yes.
How do we change that? How do we make it so that we can move beyond this and maybe we can't? Just in asking it with
yeah.
the nature of public discourse at the moment, maybe we can't get there.
I think we can. Mm-hmm. And so I want to be optimistic.
I like optimism.
I think we can. I think that, the good thing is that we do have a regulatory process.
Mm-hmm.
We do have a regulatory process that takes into account public participation, that calls for public participation. It may not be as the participation of the public may not be where a broader or certain people in society want it to be.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the issue. And I think that in order to get beyond that, there has to be a discussion involving government, involving industry, involving certain segments of society to determine what are the things that are not working and how do we address it to have a process that people can buy in. Okay? There's always going to be people who won't, but at some point, we have to say we are a democracy, we are a society of laws, we have laws, and at some point when people are complying with those laws, they should be able to operate.
And that's when we need government to stand up and do its part.
Yes, exactly.
Lead. Yeah. Thank you very much for doing this.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Thank you.